What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
What's up? I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live at Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X, formerly known as Twitter, or maybe you're listening later on Spotify, Apple, Android, wherever you get podcasts. It's all good. We love having you here. Pete, I gotta say, you were a little late today. Were you busy
sucking on a cheesesteak?
Oh man, you're fun, aren't you?
I am. I'm a delight. I'm an absolute delight.
We workshopped that. That was a real kind of timing you gotta workshop.
Yeah, we were talking about this actually the other week, that when we were live, we would always scramble to come up with a bit, but this one we planned out well in advance. 2-3 minutes ago, something like that.
Yeah. That's called preparation, guys. That's what counts in this grown-up world we live in. We're grown-ups. Ting!
We are grown-ups, but you know who's even more grown-up than a grown-up? Is somebody with a PhD.
Ooh.
They're like a professional grown-up. And we got one on the show. He is the creator of Hammer of the Dogs, which is out now. Ladies and gentlemen, Jared Keane, PhD.
Hey,
hello, welcome.
Right. Welcome.
PhD.
Dr. Keane is in the house.
Yes.
Yeah.
So just to explain that you are legit, you have a PhD and you teach graphic novels, right?
Man, I missed my calling. That's a hell of a thing to teach.
Well, talk about that a little bit. How did you get it? Is it graphic novels 101? Is it something that you integrate into your courses? How does it work?
It's a what we call a 400 level class for English majors. I mean, anyone can sign up for
it. Level.
You know, I wanted to do something with the graphic novel because that's what young people read and enjoy. And frankly, I was the only one remotely qualified to teach the graphic novel since I've been reading comics. Well, I learned to read from, you know, the spinner rack in my neighborhood. That's how I got into reading. I didn't read a proper novel until I, you know, entered college, and then
they made you.
Yes,
they made you read.
I learned the pleasures of pure prose, but you know, I could never give up comics. How do you give them up? And now that works like Alan Moore's Watchmen is considered a, you know, top 100 novels in the, one of the top 100 novels in the English language. I think it's time to push even harder on this idea that comics belong in the classroom.
Nice. Now, not
Keane,
to
how many comics hours of reading comics do you have to accomplish before you can just start calling yourself a doctor? And I believe we've reached it on that.
Well, you know, you don't have to necessarily read a bunch of comics to get a PhD. You have to like write academic articles about comic books in order to, you know, prove your bona fides.
That's harder.
Yeah, now, harder. Not too much, not to spend too much on your teaching, but in your graphic novels class, like what graphic novels do you have your students read, or which ones do you kind of point
out? Not to spend too much time on the topic we're talking about, but here's a question.
Yeah. Well, that's news to Pete. By the way, you have a new freshman coming your way.
Excellent. You're going to love Las Vegas.
Depending on the curriculum. I mean, if you throw out some ones, maybe I don't sign up here. I'm excited to hear what we're talking about.
Wait, you're in Vegas, Dr. Keane?
Yeah,
Pete, how much sweeter does this need to get?
Oh man,
I should pinch myself.
Vegas, baby, Vegas.
Yeah. Or I'll make Pete pinch me when he arrives here as an undergraduate. But
he does that. He will do that.
No, I just teach the works that you all are familiar with. You know, The Dark Knight Returns, Watchmen, Mouse, of course, and then I throw in a little curveball here and there with like The Crow by James O'Barr, which I think is a powerful and emotional piece of comic storytelling. You know, I throw in some of the more celebrated, critically acclaimed graphic memoirs like Fun Home, but I try to keep it, you know, in my wheelhouse, you know, which is like the mainstream American superhero comic in that prestige format that began really in the 80s with the release of those books that I mentioned, you know, Dark Knight, Watchmen, Mouse, the stuff that I bought at the comic shop rather than the spinner rack, the stuff that I bought at like Walden Books or B. Dalton in the mall, higher price point and all that. So that's what I Go ahead.
I was just going to say, some people have their diplomas on the wall behind them. I'm so glad that you have comic books on the wall behind you, because now I believe you're legit. You know what I mean?
That's, yeah.
I was surprised. That's what I thought you were going to ask about, Pete, was the stuff behind him. We got a question here from Kevin. Is this an actual office on campus? Fancy, because for anybody listening just to the podcast, you've got this whole great bookshelf of comics and graphic novels back there. Yeah. You got a lovely window. It's still daytime where you are.
Yes.
So that's very nice. Is this your office, or?
This is my office. Can you believe it? You're right. I'm living the dream. Why do I complain about anything?
I know you shouldn't. I mean, you are living the dream. You got an office full of comics. You teach about comics. I mean, what more is there to life?
I don't know. Wait till you see my wife. Then you're going to.
Yeah. Wow. You even have a wife? Holy crap.
Wow. While we're talking, though, about sort of the curriculum, before we get to the book, like, I feel like you were talking about books that are sort of firmly in the canon that we are like revere in general. What's a book that you sort of slide in there that you're like, you know what, this has a spot up top, book or books that you feel like should be sort of on the shelf, the top shelf?
Yeah, just to give an example, something like Lock and Key or Mouse Guard, you know, something. What do you think, though?
Donate Mouse Guard. Wow.
I'd have to say ElfQuest, and I'm not joking. I love that.
Wow, an ElfQuest guy. All right. I mean, talk about epic story.
Yeah, that was '80s.
Well, I'm writing a book about Jack Kirby's solo work. I call it a solo work. The stuff that he wrote and drew on his own once he left Marvel in 1970, you know, defected to DC Comics to create the Fourth World. And then when he returned to Marvel, you know, they let him write and draw his own material, including Machine Man, which was a terrific title, you know, Devil Dinosaur. He came back to Captain America and the Falcon. I think anything that is, you know, ignored unjustly should be an effort to like bring it back into the canon, because, you know, that's really what you know, Tolkien did with Beowulf. It was through his you know, really his efforts that the epic poem was reintroduced into literary studies, you know, in the 50s and 60s. It was because of his championing of this forgotten, misunderstood poem. And I think we should all strive to find works that are, you know, deserve more attention and more critical analysis.
Yeah, like Concrete.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Concrete. Great.
Pete's going to keep throwing things out there, but why don't we turn and talk about your book, because you did, this is not the first book you've written, but this is the most recently released, Hammer of the Dogs, that just came out a week or two ago at this point. Now, this is not a graphic novel. This is a novel. This is kind of a silly question, but why that? I mean, given clear love of graphic novels, why not try to create a graphic novel versus a wordy novel? Is what we call them here.
Well, the first issue was trying to recruit someone that I looked up to, you know, do the heavy work, the drawing, the illustrations. And I didn't want to, like, you know, saddle somebody with, you know, a project that maybe they, you know, wasn't their own idea. So I just took it upon myself just to write the fastest, most hair-raising, fun thrill ride of a prose book that I could possibly muster. And I don't know. I think I did okay with it. Readers tell me that this thing moves fast, which is what I wanted it to do. Nice. And really, what did I want? I wanted it to be a book like the ones that we grew up reading, like, you know, Stephen King's The Long Walk, or I don't know, those early novels are just so fantastic. You know, Carrie, Firestarter.
Oh yeah.
Do you know what his secret was? The cocaine.
Okay.
I mean, it was. You can't say that, like,
it was, though. I'm sorry. That's why they're so
maybe
bad.
It helped, but that's not the only reason.
He doesn't remember writing several of those books because he was so.
It happens when you get old, man.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. No, I didn't use cocaine, but I did abuse coffee.
Okay. Oh, there we go.
There it is. That's like daytime cocaine.
Yeah. So, it's the legal coke.
Off topic of this thing that I forced us into talking about, why don't you give the pitch for the book? What is the book about for anybody who doesn't know?
It is a post-apocalyptic adventure novel that's set in ruined Las Vegas, starring a 21-year-old drone assassin named Lash, who's basically fighting to protect her family and friends from two warlords who have carved up the valley. And you can see the Vegas backdrop there on the book cover. That's the Luxor where...
Yeah, her, you can see the Luxor, yeah.
Yeah, that's where her drone academy is housed, in the basement of that property, which interestingly is where I worked for many years prior to becoming a professor. I was an internal propagandist. I wrote the employee newsletter and did all these like spotlights on MGM Resorts, people, including, pastry chefs, circ acrobats, guest room attendants.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was a world within a world, and I wanted to convey some of that, gang-like tribalism in this book, because I could easily imagine the properties on the strip in a post-apocalyptic setting, vying for control over, resources like, water, power. This weird thing happened where, I don't know if you're aware of this, Las Vegas is a huge convention town.
Breaking news here on the comic book.
People like to go there when they're away from their families.
So these drone tech gatherings would occur in places like, the Mandalay Bay Convention Center. We're talking like a million plus square feet of space. And I would use my employee badge to, bust into these gatherings and survey and check out all the new drone weaponry. And it was really, really frightening. And then I started thinking about how Nevada and Las Vegas in particular, it's always been like a sandbox playground for the military industrial complex. They got Elon Musk here building tunnels underneath the strip for to ease the congestion of traffic on the strip. And
he has a room there where he just reads his tweets aloud, right? They reverberate off the walls for himself.
It wouldn't surprise me. We've got the history of atomic testing here. We've got Area 51, Hoover Dam. Las Vegas is always on the bleeding edge of technology. And so I thought, hey, why not create this post-apocalyptic story in the vein of Commandy, The Last Boy on Earth, where the kids are struggling to survive and, sniping at each other with drone tech. I thought that would make for a very scary Hunger Games-esque tale that had a bit more bite to it. I love Hunger Games. I love Divergent. I love all these YA dystopian novels, but I wanted to go back to sort of the roots of the thing with, like in the Stephen King, Jack Kirby, 80s style of aggressive storytelling. And so I just wanted to write the most aggressive, post-apocalyptic adventure I could muster with, all these references to 80s hard rock, heavy metal. And I've got references to 80s action adventure, sci-fi, fantasy films throughout. I reference everything from Dune to Krull to Tron to, Last Starfighter to Legend to Labyrinth. And I
talk about the canon right here.
Yeah,
that's my canon back when stuff was fun. And
Krull, dude. Cyclops,
Krull, exactly. Krull's the one that always says.
Which I had the comics adaptations of here.
Oh, my God. I love that back in the day. I read that so many times. The movie, I couldn't watch. Like, it would give me a headache because it was moving so slow. And I'd be like, well,
too much glaive.
Too much glaive.
Can't handle the glaive.
Can't handle, absolutely.
But also the big hits like Conan the Barbarian, Red Dawn, Road Warrior. Those are movies that inspired me to become a storyteller, and I just wanted to pay tribute to those great works by creating something new, exciting, visceral, and like I said, really aggressive. And to my dismay and pleasure, I got this book published with a university press, which I think is very interesting. I had to kind of like go around the, or, I didn't go around anything. They ignored me completely, but commercial New York publishing is just so, it's not like this. They don't care about the way things used to be. They're only interested in the new boring stuff that doesn't move me. I want to be moved. I want to have a visceral emotional reaction to things. And Dawn of the Dead gives that to me. Whereas this other stuff they make today, not so much.
I got maybe a weird question, but given this is from a university press, why doesn't it say PhD
Yeah. Well, I don't think it really helps you when it comes to crafting. It might be something they hold against you, you know, the readers.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. If I saw someone like PhD, I'd be like, whatever, big time. You know?
I don't want to get bored to death.
Yeah, exactly. This guy's going to lecture me.
You know, Frank Miller doesn't put PhD next to his name. He doesn't have one, but I mean, he wouldn't put that next to his name on the cover.
Right. So. He also doesn't put DDS. That's another thing that he's not. So there you go. Not to get back to
I want a dentist title on this. DDS.
The Dark Dentist Returns. That's what we got to get. Yeah. Now that you have the novel out there, though, do you have any thought to turn it into a graphic novel? Like now that you're past the hump of actually creating and crafting the story?
Well, if I can sell enough copies, obviously, I think that would impress an artist enough to want to jump on board. But, you know, it's one of those things where I love it the way it is, like in its current incarnation, in the same way that I'm sure Alan Moore doesn't want Watchmen to be adapted again into some other, you know, piece of crap that he doesn't like. But
has he ever talked about that?
I will. I will say this. I would rather this book be adapted into an action telenovela or a piece of musical theater before it became a graphic novel. I'm really getting into some of those cool old, 80s musicals. You know, Little Shop of Horrors, Crybaby, even Annie. Like those were really. I don't know. Those were thrilling musicals, and The Wiz was very post-apocalyptic. I don't know if you're...
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Surprising, starting points.
And so I would love to see it adapted into an unusual medium, like
an interpretive dance or something.
Jared, where can people pick up the book right now?
Yeah.
It's at your Barnes & Nobles. I saw it at Target across the street from...
Target?
Yeah, Target.
All right.
There it is.
I didn't see it at Walmart, so probably not at Walmart, but it's at the all the usual places. And, of course, you can get it through Bookshop or Amazon on the Internet. And the University of Nevada Press, you can purchase it there. But I hope that when your listeners pick it up and read it, that they shoot me an email, let me know if they enjoyed it. I don't care about Goodreads and all that, but, you know, email me and let me know if you liked it, because I want to figure out how to write the second one and the third one, you know, where I send the hero Lash, the protagonist of Hammer of the Dogs, into outer space, put her on Mars and have her fight alien drone tech from another galaxy. I think that would be a cool part of the trilogy.
And if people wanted to take your class, how would they do that?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they can enroll here at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, in the English department. You can audit my class, of course. That's one option. But yeah, you'd have to be in Las Vegas because I don't know if I'm going to teach. I'm not ready to teach an online version of of my graphic novel.
That's all right. Pete already booked a flight to Las Vegas, so you're good to go there.
Yeah.
Pete, I would love to have you here. You know, bring a few friends. Las Vegas is a fun town. It's always great to bring friends to Las Vegas and meet new friends. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm in.
The friends
I'm
you in. Make in Vegas sometimes last a lifetime because you're married to them.
Jared, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure. Good luck with the book.
And the book does
fingers
well,
crossed for the musical.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I know. I can't wait.
Thanks, Jared. Have a great
night.
Thank
you.
Later.
All right. Once again, the book is called Hammer of the Dogs. It's out now.
Yeah.
From Jared Keane. PhD. Why don't we bring in our next guest? He is the creator of The Superhero's Journey, which I believe is out today. Patrick McDonald. Patrick, woo-hoo! Welcome.
Yeah.
Hey guys, how you doing?
All right. Good, so good. Today is your book birthday, right? The book is out in stores. How does that feel to finally have it out there?
Happy birthday.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see how people relate and think of this book. It's a very different book from Marvel, so I'm curious to see how it goes over. So far, all the reactions have been good.
Yeah, I was pretty bowled over by it, even kind of knowing what to expect and seeing the cover and being like, oh, okay, I thought this was going to be a Marvel art book because it's in the Marvel art book vein. But the way that you play with form here and the comic book pages and the history of Marvel Comics is so fascinating throughout.
So cool.
Where did the idea start? Like, was the idea to do a pure history of Marvel Comics and then it morphed into something else? Did it start with the morphing part, or where did you come from?
You know, it started with, I had just finished a book. I actually did a book with the Dalai Lama called Heart to Heart. It was a graphic novel about the environment. And I didn't know what do I do after that. And then Charlie Kochman from Abrams Books asked me if I would like to play with the Marvel characters. And what artist wouldn't want to play with the Marvel characters? I mean, that was a childhood
fresh dream. Off talking to the Dalai Lama, you're like, I'll give these Marvel guys a shot.
Yeah, I mean, it goes Dalai Lama, Marvel characters. I mean, it's right there. You know what I mean?
And so, of course, I said yes. And to tell you the truth, I wasn't sure what I was going to do with them. I knew I wanted to, I did, in thinking about it, I couldn't help but go back to my childhood. I mean, you know, how important those early comics were for me. I mean, I grew up in the 60s. I was lucky enough to see Jack Kirby and Stan Lee and Steve Ditko invent all that stuff in front of my eyes. You had to wait a month for the next one.
That's what I really loved about this is it's very moving. It's a real kind of love letter to comics as a kid and kind of like that magical time of like first reading comics and having it kind of just blow your mind with possibilities and creativity.
Yeah. You know, I think everyone relates to that. You know, for me, my first comic was X-Men number 11. And, still one of my favorites. So, you know, I didn't think it was going to be a memoir, but, you know, in thinking about comics, I couldn't help but, you know, think about me as a kid just being totally fascinated with that world. So that became part of the book. I knew I wanted to draw as many characters as I could. So Fantastic Four Annual number 3, where Sue and Reed get married, was an inspiration because that book had every Marvel character on the cover and most of them inside the book. And the two quotes, the two Jack Kirby quotes that start the book and end the book were really inspiring. Hmm. Where, you know, the first quote where they ask him, it was in a telephone interview, they asked Jack if he had one superpower, what would it be? And he immediately said love. And I just thought, So it's really a love letter to Marvel and a love letter to Jack Kirby in particular.
That's awesome. I think there's probably an obvious reason for this, but why do you focus around the Fantastic Four? Because that's how it's introduced. A lot of it is with Reed and Doom and the Watcher, and they're the heart of that. But why was that important to you?
You know, it's funny. You know, it really centers on Reed Richards and the Watcher. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, if you would have asked me before I did the book that I'd have Mr. Fantastic as the main character, I wouldn't believe you. he's fairly boring, and he's not really fun to draw. I mean, he's nowhere near as fun to drawing Iron Man or Spider-Man or Giant Man. You know, the book's also a spiritual journey, and I just think The Watcher is one of Jack's greatest creations. I just think... he's such an interesting spiritual character. So I knew he was going to be a big part of the book. And it just made sense that it would be Mr. Fantastic and him that would do this journey together.
What was the draw to Mr. Fantastic?
It just happened.
Has like the father figure in the Marvel Universe a bit, the sort of like trust, you can trust him. He's sort of like is the brains, he can stretch, figure things out. Like, is that part of it, you think? Yeah, what was it for you?
It's that, and it's, you know, boy, I mean, Jack put a lot of spirituality in his work. And, you know, The Watcher, from all the spiritual books I've read, you know, the idea of just watching and not interfering, like, you know, that is just a theme in a lot of spiritual books, just that you watch the universe and see the beauty in everything. And I just thought, to me, the book starts out with the Watcher saying that I'll read the quote.
While you're looking it up, I just want to say the art, there's so many great pieces of art that are in here. Like, I really love them. They stick out so much.
Well, here, why don't you read the quote and then we can get back to that.
It says, the whole of life lies in the verb seeing. And I think that's what the book's about, like, as a kid, what you saw in those comics and how they moved you and just seeing all the beauty around us. With Marvel Comics being one of the things with the beauty around us.
I think this is what Justin was getting at a little bit, is you have, I don't know if you'd necessarily call it mixed media, but it's definitely mixed formats in terms of using the actual Marvel art from back in the day mixed with your art. For example, maybe I'm wrong about this, but we're looking here on the live show at a picture of Eternity that looks like it came straight out of the comics with your drawing in the background of what I assume is a church or some house of worship. How did you put that together? How did you choose to structure things artistically in that way?
Well, you know, I thought it would be great to have Jack and Steve Ditko's artwork in the book and Stan's stories. So it's a mashup of my work and their work. And even with my work, I was doing these really huge paintings of Marvel characters, and I was able to incorporate them into the story too. So there's a lot of different looks, but somehow it all works together. I mean, my art next to Jack Kirby's or Steve Ditko's, I think it's funny how you could, it doesn't stop you. The story just continues. I think you know these characters so well, you just really follow the characters in the story. And I think what I was trying to capture, not their look, but the energy and love that they had in their work. I was trying to capture some of that cosmic magic those guys did.
There's a passage in here that I wanted to just hit real quick where the Watcher gives Reed a no prize, which is, and you find the way to make the fact that if you pointed out, well, explain what a no prize is and then explain the spirituality that you sort of unearthed connected to it. Cause I really loved it.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of the things that Stan marketed with in the '60s. And I always loved the idea of the no prize, and the no prize was an envelope with nothing in it, but a nice drawing of the Hulk telling you that it was a no prize. And if you wrote a letter and you found a mistake in a Marvel comic, you would get a no prize. And that's actually my no prize from many
years. You have one.
And so in the book, you know, Mr. Fantastic is getting frustrated and can't find an answer. So the Watcher says maybe the answer lies in this envelope, and he gets the no prize. And then basically he sees that there's nothing in there. And the Watcher says that, you know, don't desire anything, don't need anything. You know, it's the gift of nothing is what it is.
What was your no prize for? What did you get a no prize for? Do you remember?
You know, I, to tell you the truth, I don't. Because you didn't have to have a letter printed to get a no prize. Because I remember I wrote in the letter, and I was young enough that I don't remember what I caught, but I knew the letter didn't get printed, but I still got a no prize, which was really nice.
You caught the fact that there a Spider-Man couldn't possibly exist, right? Mistake that they made. You mentioned this earlier, and I think you touched on this a little bit, but I thought it was very interesting to hear you talk about this as a spiritual journey. How much do you think this book was changed based on the fact that you had just done a book with the Dalai Lama? Do you think that was very much on your mind going into this?
Yeah, I would think so. You know, I think there's compassion. You know, even in my Mutz comic, I mean, compassion's a major theme, and I think that's always been part of my work. But after having just visited the Dalai Lama, it was definitely it's always important to me, but it was definitely on the front burner for me.
And does the Dalai Lama have a favorite comic book character?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't get a chance to ask.
All right. To flip it back to you, though, you know, you talked about not really loving Reed. You like drawing Iron Man, but is Iron Man your favorite Marvel character? Is that the one you identify with, or who's your guy or girl?
You know, for me, it's funny. I growing up, I had two brothers, and my older brother he chose which books we were allowed to collect.
Ooh.
So, he collected pretty much everything, and I got the X-Men, which ended up being great because I love the X-Men. So to this day, the early X-Men are still my favorites.
Yeah, awesome. I know the book has only been out a day, but have you had any reactions? Have you got out to a store and seen it on the shelves or anything like that?
You know, I was at the Baltimore Comic Con.
Hey, all right.
We were there.
Yeah, you know, I saw that you guys were there. But, you know, so people saw it and the next day came back. And, people relate to that love of comics. I think I've gotten nothing but really great reactions from it. So I'm really excited.
Awesome. Well, Patrick, what is, I know this just came out, but what is next for you at this point? Do you have something lined up that you're already working on, or are you just letting this sit for a while and then go from there?
You know, who knows? like the watcher, I'm just watching and see what happens next. I never thought I would have done a book with the Dalai Lama. I never thought I would have done a book with the Marvel characters. So, boy, I'm just keeping things open and see what happens next. I tell you, I enjoyed this book so much. I wouldn't mind doing some more Marvel books.
You, you can tell. You need to sit down with the watcher himself.
it was the most fun I've ever had in the book. And even at the Baltimore Comic Con, in every book I would draw, I would ask the person who purchased it who their favorite hero was, and I would draw it. And I tell you, spending a day just doodling Marvel characters is not a bad life.
Awesome. Nice. Would you ever want to do a DC one, or are you always a Marvel guy?
Well, you know, as a kid, I was a Marvel guy, but yeah, no. Actually, I'm a Jack Kirby guy, and I think the New Gods are my favorite books at all. So, that could be a possibility, but I'm just a comic guy. Live and breathe comics between Charles Schultz and Crazy Cat. And, just anything, pictures and art. That's what it's about, pictures and art.
Couldn't agree more.
Words and art.
Patrick, thank you so much for coming on. Congrats on the book. It's wonderful.
So good.
Have a great night.
Okay. Thanks so much, guys.
All right.
Take care. Later.
Oop, I cut him off. But classic Patrick Donnell, the classic Zalman, The Superhero's Journey, definitely check it out. It is
It's very touching. Beautiful story, so well put together.
Really cool.
It's a great adventure.
The mixed media nature of it.
Yeah, and again, like we were talking about, it was not what I expected going in at all, but it takes you on this very emotional journey like we've been talking about. So check it out everywhere from Abrams Books.
Yeah.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. And we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience questions. And this is the audience questions march, everybody.
March to the audience section portion. I do want to, just before we get too far, there's a question from Edward Doherty on the no prize that I think might be a good kickoff.
Sure, absolutely. Let me just turn down this jamming music here. So Edward Doherty does bring up, you had to notice a mistake and then suggest a solution to get a no prize right. He is, in fact, correct. Edward, you have won a no prize for the show.
No prize for you. No prize for you. No prize for you.
We will be donating $0 in your
name. You get a no prize. You get a no prize.
Congratulations, Edward. That's wonderful. Now, as we all know, every week, Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullet, a.k.a.
The Chef.
I thought you were going to say straight bullies.
Yeah, keep you on your toes, you man. Always, 80 years of doing this. You know, I got to keep you on your toes.
You always keep it fresh. You're like Kevin Smith in that quote.
Straight bullies.
Anyway, he always curates a drink. This week, I think it's National Coffee Day, he said, on Friday. So he's curating coffee drinks. We'll say, it was a little late for me to have some coffee. You know what I'm talking about, though? And really keep me up for
all right,
a
old
time.
Man.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. So I'm just having a 6-point Bengali. There you go.
Ooh, look at nice. You.
Yeah, it's good. What about you, Justin?
I've got a sort of a tequila. It's almost like a tequila Negroni, you might say, in that neighborhood with grapefruit tequila. And I'm moving over to keeping it local with the Brooklyn Lager.
Nice. And Pete, you're still working through Pony Boy?
That's right. I'm staying golden. That's right.
Stay golden. I was going to say stay fresh, but that's wrong.
Yep.
Yeah, that's Subway. Eat fresh.
Yes.
But that's also what Pete's doing.
I don't know how fresh Subway is.
Yeah, have you tried the Subway beer? It's pretty good.
Oh, they have
a meatball sub IPA. It's like very bad. Yeah.
If you leave any bad. Subway sub in your fridge for long enough, it becomes alcoholic. And by long enough, I mean 45 to 50 minutes.
Well, listen, we got a question here. This is from Edward. Does Jim Handley's closing represent a problem with the industry? What are those problems, wow, in your opinion? You know, there's been a lot of talk about this online, not just specifically about this, but just in terms of like quality of life for comic book creators, quality of life for comic shop owners and people who work there. There's also been a lot of, and I don't say this derisively, but like hand-wringing coming from people in terms of the industry. Is it on a downward trend right now? Is there a lack of creativity? Is there a lack of sales? All of these things that are questions. There's no like, there's no bubble bursting or anything like that, but there's also no bubble to begin with. So I think the impression that everybody is getting is it's sort of like a slowly deflating balloon is what's going on. Well, what do you guys think? What's your take on this? Let's just do a real quick state of the comic book industry. Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, good. We're definitely the people that have the best answers to this question. Mm-hmm. I mean, specifically with this as the prompt, I think it's just harder to run any sort of business in a major metropolitan area because people who want to, like, younger people, people who want to buy comics aren't, like, wealthy real estate investors from around the world, so they don't live in Manhattan anymore, so it's harder to have a store there. I actually think smaller town and suburban comic book stores seem to be doing better because they are also gathering places for different things. And it's just it's a bummer that a institution like Jim Handley's is closing, but it's more of a city problem than a comics industry problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they got to honestly, like, pandemic's over, open things back up. That's what you're saying, right, Justin? Right.
I'm not saying that specifically. Yeah, I'm saying more. I'm saying cities are not affordable anymore.
No, 100%. I mean, I think the things that I've been seeing, and this is obviously my very specific experience here in New York, but occasionally I'll go by Midtown Comics because it's near my office, and it's usually pretty full. There's a lot of people in there constantly buying stuff, even not on a Wednesday. And I think that's the reputation they built up is like, they are currently the flagship store in New York, maybe on the East Coast, possibly in America, just in terms of like, they're clean, they're friendly, they know how to manage their stuff, they do a good job with all of that, and they've gotten that reputation going for years, so people know to go there. And then they've also got several central locations. And then on the other end of the spectrum, I think you have things like an Eddie One Comics in Brooklyn, which, to your point, creates a community around the shop, and that's what keeps people coming back there. Or I've been taking my son to Galaxy Comics right in Park Slope, and that also usually, it's not packed even on a Wednesday, but there's usually a couple of people there anytime we go in, so I assume they're doing okay, and they're friendly and nice, and it's a central location that it works. So there's strategies there, but Jim Handley's having a place in the Empire State Building, rent's got to be a little high.
Got to be expensive over there.
Yeah.
And also, we can't forget about the digital side of it. Like, most people are reading their comics not in paper form. So.
That's true. But with the implosion of Comixology, I do think it's made it a little more confusing how and why, when to buy comics. So I don't know. I think comic shops got to figure out a way forward to recapture that interest, because there is a real possibility of having them as a community hub again now that digital is like on the rocks, but we'll see.
Yeah. It sucks. It's heartbreaking because comic book shops are just such a cool place to go. They're very fun. All of them are unique, and they all have kind of like a different kind of vibe. And I love going into different comic book shops just to see what their deal is, you know, what they're about and how they kind of set up. So it's heartbreaking that, you know, I wish more people would choose comic book shops as a destination. And it sucks when a comic book shop isn't doing well. So that's heartbreaking, man.
And one thing, I know I've said this one kabillion times over the course of while we've been doing the show, digital doesn't hurt brick and mortar stores. It just doesn't, because if people like the comics, they still want to buy them physically. Like, I think the best example of that is The Walking Dead, where, as reported on the Comic Book Club News podcast, they are releasing a 20th anniversary box set, which is just like the same 8 volumes that everybody has in 4 different chunks, now in a box, and that's it. But they'll sell.
Oh,
them.
Man, in a box?
In a box. It's actually,
I got to go to a store and get one, then.
It's a very nice slipcover box, but I think it points to the fact, obviously, Walking Dead is an extreme case here, but people will keep buying these books. Like, they own them, and they will keep buying them over and over in different iterations, or new people will come to them. And I think it's the same thing with, like, obviously, those top-tier things, like Scott Pilgrim, I think, is a good example, or probably Heartstopper is up there right now. You've got the stuff that Jarrett was talking about earlier, like your Fun Homes and your Persepolis that are just perennial sellers. Mm-hmm. Watchmen, there's been a million different versions of it. So people own this stuff, but they want to own it in different capacities. Digital doesn't hurt it. It can only emphasize it, and both can exist at the same time. But they got to figure out that they're not at war with each other. Or at least the comic shops need to figure out they're not actually at war with digital. Yeah. In any case, we got a bunch of other questions here. This is from Frederico Rosa. Which comic characters would you have liked to have as a college teacher?
Well, we all know Wolverine took over teaching the school, and that was just glorious. I mean, who would want to take his class? You know what I mean?
And that was seen as a spectacular success, and he's the Professor X in going forward in general. Everyone would agree.
Who would you want, Justin? Who would you want as a college teacher?
Sandman.
Which one?
And I know Morpheus? What you're thinking. I wasn't. I was actually thinking the one that's made of sand.
Oh.
Oh, that Sandman?
The villain, the Sandman. Flint
the
Marco?
Actor?
Yeah, exactly. He's a great actor.
Thomas Hayden Church? Is this a Thomas Hayden Church thing?
Yeah, exactly.
No.
You love him. Wings.
You love Wings. You're always talking about
Wings. I love
Wings.
Yeah. Look, I am always talking about Wings, and if you want to go have some fun, go watch some Wings. Like, if you're looking for a
don't
great
tell place, people to go other places. Who
hey,
are
everybody, I'm Sandman, and this is Wings 101. Just to be clear, for anybody who's here, this is not Buffalo Wings. This is not Spicy Wings. We're talking about the show Wings, okay?
I'm out.
Yeah, and I'm Sandman, not the dream guy. I'm the beach guy.
So, the beach guy.
Half the class gets up and leaves.
My job isn't beach. I am beach. Just to be clear, that's topical. You kids like that movie.
I was taking a class about dreaming about Wings, Buffalo Wings.
Oh, yeah.
TV show Wings by Thomas H.
Yeah. How did they grade that class? How did they grade it? Why don't we move on? This is from Kevin. Beside comics, what would you teach a college class about? You're teaching as an adjunct and don't get an office.
Oh, Kevin,
I don't
not
get
necessary.
An office. Come
not
on.
Necessary.
Kevin.
I would teach Kevin, a class of Kevin being mean.
Exactly. I would take over for Kevin's puppetry class and fire him from this adjunct professorship and kick him out of his office.
Yeah. But really, though, if you could teach a college class about anything, what subject do you think you could successfully apply?
I guess podcasting with frenemies.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. I was going to say Ted Lasso 101 I could do. Obviously,
don't
I've already
short, Pete.
Taught
you
improv,
teach-
so...
It's true. You are a storied improv teacher. Pete, you could teach a Ted Lasso 201, I think.
And a 301.
Doesn't have to be entry level.
Welcome to Ted Lasso 201, where we watch Ted Lasso 201 times. Is that what that means?
Exactly.
This is from Stray Bullet. In the Slack, we had a very long thread based on my sarcastic post about wanting Tom King to take over all of DC. Does knowing Tom King is ex-CIA make you second-guess reading his work?
Now, we should explain the little bit of Slack backstory on this.
Slack story, if you will.
Slack story.
You join the Patreon, you get to be part of our Slack.
Where you get to get in fights with people that you don't get to meet in real life. So
it's not
fun.
Even a fight. This was a debate amongst... probably almost a dozen people, I would think, over the run of it. That was an ongoing post. It was like 250 plus posts in the thread currently.
Wow.
So it's fascinating. It's a great discussion about Tom King, what it means to be an artist, what like their life before, during, and after their work should be, and in relation to their work. It's really
bless
good.
You.
So like...
Oh, I thought you were going to comment on a text.
Yeah, no. I was going to, but then I had to sneeze.
Okay. I'll throw out there. We talked about this a little bit. By the way, I'm going to take this question away because you're basically Wilsoning out right now, Pete. The thing that we talked about when we were talking about Wonder Woman number one with Tom King, I believe, is that he's been very clear that he was in the CIA or consulted in the CIA and then got very disillusioned with the American government. And I think that's fine. Like, it doesn't affect his work because he has experience in this thing and has ultimately decided that's not something that he wants to be part of, and he disagrees with a lot of the methods. He's allowed to use his experience and write about it like anybody else.
So you don't think it's a trap that CIA is getting into comic books to recruit children?
No, listen, I read Wonder Woman number one. Yes, there was a blinking green light in the comic book, and it started to track my movements, but I don't think those things are related.
Okay. Cool.
I think, like, there was a lot of talk about, like, him sort of needing to own up to his work in the CIA or, like, being a part of the CIA at a time where they were doing, like, morally bad or / ambiguous things, depending on what you believe.
But now they're totally clean and totally cool.
Well, I mean, that part hasn't come out. Present problems haven't come out yet until the future. But I don't know. Like, it's hard to hang all of the CIA's crimes on one person, and especially a person who has come out and said, I left that because I don't like that. And now he is moving on and doing something else, and sure, drawing on his experience, but it's not like he's doing pro-CIA things. I think he's talking about institutions. He's talking about PTSD. He's talking about a lot of feelings and things that I think that happened to him in his life there. And I think that's what any writer does.
Yeah. Pete, what do you think about this? You seem to not want to talk about it, maybe.
Yeah, I definitely don't. But I do think it makes a lot more sense knowing that about him, because he does, like, keep information from you for, like, a big reveal at the end to maybe kind of trick you of what you think is happening to what actually is happening.
Oh, so makes you think he's you think he's running an op?
Yeah.
He's been running
ops on us the whole time. And, it's really just pushing his patent cat and bat agenda.
Well, I mean, I'll throw something out here, and this is 100% not throwing under the bus a guy that we like, but Philip Kennedy Johnson was in the Army, and he took that experience, and he writes through that experience often, like Jon Stewart. He's writing Green Lantern War Journal right now, and we talked to him about this at Baltimore. He's channeling some of that experience into the book. He's doing the same thing with Action Comics. I think, like you're saying, Justin, you use that experience. You don't have to agree with everybody's backstory or what they did, but, like, I don't know, particularly if they experience something and feel it's complicated and want to wrestle with those feelings emotionally and intellectually in a comic book, great. I think that makes them better and richer and more interesting. I would rather
Edward Doherty says Larry Hama, same.
Larry Hama.
And he was in G.I. Joe? Is that his backstory?
Yeah. He was Wrightwell was his name in G.I. Joe, right, Pete?
I'll stop with that.
Why are you mad? Why are you mad?
Because it bothers me you don't know the names and don't like the names. That's
Justin. That's your
his name was Carbon, okay? Because, like, carbon and a pencil, because that's what you used to write.
Good. Yeah, Carbon number two. Was that it, Pete?
Carbon number two. Carbon number one was in Cobra.
Yeah, I'll definitely, if we're dropping name corrections and live on the show, good to know.
Yeah. Good to know. And it is good to know all of you for sending in all of your questions. So thank you for that. We are going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Oh, man. I don't know if that's a good idea, but let's do it anyway. Woo-hoo-hoo! All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 to Midtown Comics online, because if you have $25, you get some comic books. So we just need a brave volunteer, or do we already have one planned?
We have David Quinley says he'll do it.
Yeah, David, so
all right. David, so you are going to drop your answers in the questions, drop your answers, in the comments, excuse me, over on wherever you are, YouTube, I assume. And there you go.
All right. Today's trivia is on fun comic book facts and a respectful nod to Steve Harwell. R.I.P., you are an all-star. Okay, here we go. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. In the late 80s, which DC comic book character served as the Iranian ambassador for the United Nations? Was it A, the Joker, B, not a rooster, or C, Michael Kluster?
A lot of options there.
The Joker was an Iranian ambassador?
That is correct, yes. And too bad your name isn't David Quinley, because otherwise I'd be able to move on.
Well, assume David said it, but I feel like I need more explanation there. Maybe I'll look at it.
Question from Edward Doherty. Can you give a G.I. Joe title to your co-host?
Pete?
Yeah, I liked how Justin's code name is Classically Trained. That's pretty fun.
100%.
Yeah, that's
My way. I'm the face of...
Yeah, you're the face shows. Man. Yeah, that's... Yeah, but anyways, I thought it'd be fun to do kind of like fun facts instead of news because, you know, we have a news thing that comes out every day, so I can't really compete with it, you know what I mean?
Pete, by the way, I just wanted to mention, starting tomorrow on Comic Book Club News, we're going to be paying tribute to a dead celebrity every episode. Oh, that's cool with you.
Okay.
This is a good...
snake eating its tail situation. All right, I'm trying to help you, and all you're doing is fucking... All right, here we go. In the 1940s, there was
David never answered the question.
Yeah, but we did for him, and Edward Doherty was nice enough to put it in there because maybe David lost internet for a little bit and hasn't been responding.
I would think David, we would want to have the person taking the quiz be at least...
It's fine. Just move on. We'll assume he got it. Go ahead.
Yeah, here we go. Question number two. In the 1940s, there was a comic book character called Blank. Is it A, Green Llama, B, person who loves sitting out under the stars, or C, Greg Camp?
Feeling like we got an AA situation going on here.
Yeah.
Double A's.
Alcohol.
I guess
Anonymous.
Pete's G.I. Joe name would be Too Many Hoodies.
There's never too many hoodies.
I feel like we talked about this years ago and decided that Pete's G.I. Joe name was Garbage Plate. Is that correct?
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
Definitely.
Or,
how about Suckin' Anna?
No, I think maybe
G plate.
I eat my feelings, or
I eat my feelings.
Oh my god! Let's just assume it's A. We don't know what happened with David. Let's go to the third.
Okay, great.
Question.
Here we go. Last one. Marvel once did a what if where Peter Parker was bitten by a radioactive blank. Was it A, a sheep? B, does Mark serve bugs? Or C, Mark Cervantes?
This is a really hard one. What did they call him when he was bit by a sheep, Pete?
Well, that wasn't in there, but yeah, it would have been good if I looked it up.
Spider Mew.
Well, whatever. Probably. Oh, sheep. David's back. David says, "Hey,
yeah, he's correct, David."
There we go, David.
Back hard.
He lost the chat, but he is back in it, and he has won. David, shoot us an email, and we're going to get you a gift card to Midtown Comics for $25. Pete!
We're talking about the 2001 movie Rat Race.
And so wait, and the person you're paying tribute to, can you just shout out if people don't know the name? Because it's not as much of the celebrity you're talking about isn't known for their name.
Well, I think he was the lead singer of Smash Mouth.
That's what I'm saying. I wanted you to say that.
I gave hints to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. When you pay, Justin, calm down. When you pay tribute to a person, you don't provide any details about them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You just say their name. I look forward to Pete's eulogy at my funeral is going to be like just a half mumbled sentence at the urinal in the bathroom.
That's right. And you know what's going to be great about it is people are going to come up to me and be like, "Hey, great job, man! You really did it,
Alex."
Job.
All I want you at my funeral is to just please ask for the secret Justin quiz.
Then you pop up.
It's just a recording that gets played. Yeah,
like the Joker at the end of the original Batman. Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go. Congrats on that $25. Now, as we all know, new comic books coming out all the time. Tons of them coming out this week. What are you guys looking forward to, Pete?
There's a ton of stuff that I can't wait to talk to you guys about. Maleficent number 5, I'm very excited to talk about. Also, Invincible Iron Man number 10, as well as Batman, Catwoman, The Gotham War, Red Hood number 1.
Justin, what about you? What about you? What are you excited for?
What about you?
About you. I agree, there is a lot of stuff coming out. And
do you think maybe there's too much, Justin? Do you think there's too much?
I would never say that because I guess I love comics. of anyone here. I mean, I will
say... you say you love comics more than me and Alex? Is that what you're trying to say right
now? We could never prove that. We could never prove that. Or we should find a way to prove that.
Yeah, maybe we look into who takes the most care of their comic books, and that's a way to tell, because that ain't you. That ain't you, bro.
And I wish I could show you the comics at my feet.
I see a stack of rubble behind you that breaks my fucking heart.
Those guys? They're hanging out.
Yeah.
They're great. It's not rubble. They're bagged and boarded, dog.
Doesn't look like it.
Who they are. I got to give it up to What's the Furthest Place from Here, number 14.
Ooh,
great book. This comic is just a wild ride every week, and it feels like the world is starting to sort of tighten up in a great way. I'm excited about it. I also want to shout out Action Comics, number 1057. Philip Kennedy Johnson is really bringing the heat over there.
Yeah, I would say the stuff that I was most excited about that's coming out this week.
I agree with you with the Action Comics, by the way.
The Flash, number 1 from DC Comics. Always interested to check out a new run on that. And Miracle Man, the Silver Age, number 6. Very curious to see where this story is going. And, of course, Mark Buckingham, always fantastic on art. And, folks...
Wait, before we go, shout out to Mind Grenade Studios in the comments. Fourth member of Comic Book Club was quiet this episode. Shout out to the Cricket.
Yeah!
The Cricket that haunted last week's stack. We'll see if he's only a stack guest. We'll see if he pops back up.
We'll see. All right. Oh, my G.I. Joe name is Slackbot.
Yeah!
I can roll
that. That's hilarious. That's great.
Transform, roll out. Slackbot. That's what I always say.
Slackbot, classically trained and garbage play. Always here, ready to serve.
That's right.
Not great in the battle situation.
All right. That is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Jared Keen, PhD, for coming on to talk about Hammer of the Dogs, now in stores everywhere. Also, Patrick McDonnell for the Superheroes Journey from Abrams Books, also available in stores everywhere. Next week, we're going to have a bunch of guests on the show. Richard Pace will be here to talk about Coven, a book about 100 witches. Laurie Foster will be back to talk about Heart Eater. And Camarish Johnson, who you might know best as Luke Fox from Batwoman, who is also the writer of Tower, will be here to talk about Tower. So there you go. That's the comic. A couple of other things to plug. Scott Pilgrim versus the podcast. Our Scott Pilgrim podcast is taking a trek back through the books before the Netflix show. Comic Book Club News, as mentioned, every day of the week with Comic Book Club News right
in
your ears. It is. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast. You can check that out. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. Patreon.com/Comic Book Club to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live. On Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live. On Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Go podcast shows.
Hey, everybody, we just wanted to give you a shout out here to let you know that podcasting and drinking isn't cool. Sure, we do it here on the show, but it can be dangerous, and it's not something you want to get involved in. Until next time, transform and roll out.
The more you know.